So now it's been a couple of weeks that hopefully you've been practicing at home, meditating, and trying the instructions out. So do you have any questions about your experience or your practice or anything from last week or any comments or reports about how it's going before we kind of venture forth into the further instruction? It's very helpful for me if you have comments and questions, because then I kind of have a sense of, you know, what's going on and what kind of things need to be addressed. Oh, yes, please.
I have a question. I've noticed that often when I'm meditating, I notice my vision of the backs of my eyelids will reflect a color. And another friend of mine who does meditation says that often that can be related to your chakras. Like, for instance, I saw green during one meditation session. And another time I saw orange. And my friend said the green indicated the heart chakra.
Yeah, usually in Buddhism they don't use the chakra system, so we wouldn't talk about that particularly. The appearance of different colors sometimes in meditation sometimes comes with different levels of concentration, or has sometimes to do with a certain level of concentration and some other mental factors that come into play at the same time. Some people are more visual than others, and so certain things play themselves out through colors or through visions. The important thing from the point of view of mindfulness practice is not to try to understand the meaning of it, but rather to use that as another place to develop your mindfulness. If we get caught up in the meaning and analyzing it, then we've actually stepped aside from the very simple practice of noticing what's happening in the present. So, seeing, just be aware of seeing is happening, seeing green, and just let it be that simple. And don't try to elaborate and figure out what it means. You can do that later, but for the point of view of the practice, we don't need to do that. So last week I talked about mindfulness of the body, including the body as part of the practice. Did you find that interesting or useful or difficult to include the body? What did you find out? Yes, please.
Well, I thought it was really great because I always have this big knot in my back, and I was able to just observe it and actually make it go away. I don't know if I'll have that kind of luck every time, but it was just cool because it went from being a big knot to just a sensation that was kind of traveling around and I could follow it. And
great. Great, thank you. This group is ready to meditate. Okay, so let's do that. So take a comfortable, upright posture. There's sometimes a tendency to think that there's only one answer, or one way. And so we focus on one way of being. It's like, this is what I'm trying to do. For meditation, it's often important to be aware that you're actually trying to develop two seemingly opposite qualities at the same time. And one quality we're trying to develop is to be relaxed, to be at ease, to be calm. And at the same time, we're trying to develop the capacity to be alert and in a certain way energized, to have some certain vitality in the system. If you're too calm, too relaxed, you'll fall asleep, your mind will get dull, the energy will kind of drain from you with time. If you're too alert, too much energy, it tends to be agitating. If you focus only on relaxation, then you won't reach the depths of what's possible through meditation. And what you need to do is to be aware that both of them are happening at the same time. And so while at the same time you're following the trail of relaxation and getting calm, you're also maintaining an alertness, a kind of vibrancy, a kind of clarity, and not losing that by kind of indulging and trying to get relaxed. Does that make sense? So a very simple way to kind of illustrate this would be, if you want, you can close your eyes, sit up straight, and sit in such a way that there's more alertness in your spine. Kind of lift up your spine and stretch it out a little bit, and not to strain it, but just so this feels more alive and alert, and maybe even happier, a happy spine. And let that kind of travel up through your neck also, the vertebrae of your neck. And you might find that making a little bit more space between the last vertebrae and the skull, opening that up a little bit, even adds a little bit more to that sense of an alert spinal column. And then maintaining that alertness in the spine, as you take a deep breath in and then out again, as you exhale, let all the muscles around the spine, the shoulders, the shoulder blades, the chest, the stomach, let all those muscles relax, let go. You're not letting go of this alert spine, just all the extra muscles around it. Taking a few more deep, slow, long breaths to establish a connection with your body from the inside. As you breathe out, to settle into this place, this time, this body. Sometimes when you're meditating, you can become aware of how the mind is like a sportscaster, a news commentator, constantly making commentary about either what's happening in the present moment, trying to understand its meaning or judging it, making all kinds of commentary, or reporting about what happened before, or planning what's in the future. The commentary can be on all kinds of things. The art of meditation is to relax the commentator, the commentary. It's not needed anymore. In favor of just being with your immediate, direct, lived experience. Just the facts, not the interpretation. So, what is the lived experience you have of your breathing? And taking some time to become familiar with what breathing feels like within your body, the movements, different parts of your body as you breathe. The rhythm of expanding and contracting. there's kind of an alertness of the mind that allows you to be discerning about what your experience of breathing is, to investigate it, to get to know it. Is it short, your breath? Are they long? Are they shallow or deep? At the same time, as there's a kind of alertness in the mind, you can allow the breathing within your body to calm your body and mind. It's like getting a massage from the inside, perhaps. Each time you exhale, to relax and let go of tensions and holding in the body. Letting the rhythm of breathing in and breathing out, one after the other, have a calming effect on your body and your mind, your heart. As you rest with your breathing, you can let your thinking mind rest also. There's nothing you need to think about. The exhausted mind can let go. When your mind has drifted off into thought and you notice it, there's no need for commentary or judgment. Just when you've noticed that, acknowledge it, be aware that's happened, and then begin again with your breathing. If you are present for your breath, for your breathing, the breathing will help condition, calm, settle your life. Let there be a receptive presence for your breathing, so the breathing can do its work within you. And now, let go of your breathing, paying attention to it. And instead, let your attention notice how you're feeling. What's the basic mood or emotional state that's present for you as you sit here now? Anything is allowable. Calm, agitated, happy, sad. Content. Fearful. Irritated. And then as you notice how you're feeling, your emotional state, however subtle it might be, notice where in your body that the mood or the emotional state is most manifest. in the face, the head, the shoulders, upper chest, the belly, around the eyes, in the arms and the hands? Where is the energetics of the emotional state? And as you feel it as a physical state, as a physical experience, very quietly acknowledge the presence of the emotion, the mood, and allow it to be there. Just acknowledge and be present for it, and notice what happens as you do that. Notice if there are any judgments or reactions to the presence of your mood or emotional state. And see if you can give precedence to just feeling how it actually is, as opposed to getting interested in your reactions or judgments. Let go of those if you can. And let go of that and come back to your breathing. And gently, softly, hang in there with your breathing for the next minute or two. I'm reminded of a friend of mine who was teaching a mindfulness-based stress reduction course. And there was a retired police officer in the course who had a lot of back pain. And he came, nothing else seemed to have helped. He tried all kinds of medical interventions to try to help him with his back pain, and nothing seemed to help him. So the doctor said, well, try this mindfulness-based approach. And so he showed up for the class, and the instructions in the class was just feel your pain. And he got angry with the instructor and had a little argument. He'd spent his whole life trying to get away from it, trying to fix it, try to do anything to kind of make it better. And the last thing that he ever wanted to do was simply to feel it as it actually was. And he thought this was the most absurd instructions he'd ever been given. Feel my pain? I mean, it's absurd. And slowly, in the course of the course, what he learned was how powerful it is to just be present for things as they are, as opposed to always avoiding how things are. And so it certainly works with physical issues, physical pain. It's very helpful to learn how to be present for it and feel it, so we can learn to use the information that's present from in the physical pain to know how to go about our life in a wise way. But also, more profoundly, awareness itself sometimes allows the physical stuff to begin unraveling itself, relaxing. Often when we live in reactive mode to our experience, we tend to kind of tighten up around it, contract around it, make it a lot worse. And to simply bring simple presence to something is to stop that reactive mode. And even trying to run away from something is sometimes just adding to more of the reactivity that sometimes will actually keep things in place. Or being aggressive and trying to lash out at it. There's a wonderful little story, kind of a maybe fairy tale, from that the Buddha told. And the story about a in the kind of pantheon of Indian gods, there was a particular kind of little god or godlike being that was called a yaksha. And when yaksha is kind of like a little ugly runt of a troll. You can imagine what that would look like. And this little runt of a troll, one day climbed up onto Brahma's throne. Brahma is the greatest god of the Indian pantheon. And he isn't quite the creator god of Christianity and Judaism, but you can imagine, you know, how the god of the Old Testament would have taken to, you know, some little runt climbing up on his throne. So it was quite a breach of etiquette in the Indian pantheon for this little runt to get up on his throne when Brahma was away from his palace one day. So the other gods who were in the court of Brahma, the lesser gods, they started getting really angry at this runt of a troll and started yelling at him and saying, "You shouldn't be here. It's terrible. You're in the wrong place. It's a breach of etiquette." And as they were kind of expressing their disgust and anger at this troll, he proceeded to grow bigger and bigger. He started getting bigger and bigger. And then he got more and more beautiful as this proceeded. And they were quite confused. The more they were yelling at him, the bigger and bigger and more beautiful he got. So finally they gave up and they went and found Brahma and explained to him what had happened. And Brahma said, I know what to do. So he went back to his court and he stood in front of his throne where this troll was sitting. And he said, "Oh, I'm very happy to see you. I hope you're comfortable up there. And I hope you've been well." And, you know, just started offering his respect and his kindness to this troll. And as he did that, the troll got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until finally, poof, he disappeared. And then Brahma explained to the others, "This troll is an anger-eating troll. It thrives in anger. And as you kept feeding it your anger, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And if you take away its food, it just shrinks." So sometimes the way we react to things, through aversion, through running away, through holding on, through grasping onto it, will actually compound various kinds of problems. Certain things that we really want to get rid of sometimes actually grow by the way in which we react and affect it. The power of presence, the power of just raw mindfulness, really seeing things as they are, is a power of kindness, of allowing things to be as they are. It's a power of respect. I like the word respect a lot because it means, literally means, to look again. You look again, you look more carefully at what's there. And you don't look at it with aversion, you don't look at it with desire, you don't look at it with judgment, you simply see it as it actually is. And that is a very, very powerful thing to do in our lives. One other place to do this is with our emotions. So some people have never really spent time really feeling their emotions. If it's a so-called negative emotion, some people are often running away from it or acting on it, or often there's a kind of motivational side of an emotion where we kind of want to react to things. If we get angry, some people don't just simply feel their anger. But they believe that the anger requires them to act right now, to say something or to hit someone or something or whatever. If you have a desire, some people feel every desire is believable and necessary. And so, you know, it's, you know, we want to act on it right away. The art of mindfulness is not to let our emotional life lead us around by the nose, the motivation that's inherent in some emotions, but rather to learn how to just feel it as it is, to feel our desire, to feel our anger, to feel our love, to feel our aversion, to feel our fear. And in feeling it, learn how to be independent and free of it. You can't learn how to develop an independent presence, an independent stillness within you, unless you know how to be present for things directly as they are. So the beginning of a path of mindfulness is to learn how to recognize the emotions when they're there, and recognize them in such a way that we're no longer reacting to their presence. Now, that sounds very wonderful, maybe. What happens to many of us is that it isn't that we're reacting to the emotion, but say that I'm sitting here and I feel a little bit impatient, and then I notice I'm impatient, I'm uncomfortable being impatient, and then there's a problem, that means there's a problem somewhere in the universe, that I'm impatient, and it's like that guy up there hasn't rung the bell yet, and so you get angry at this guy. Then you realize you're taking a mindfulness class where you're supposed to help you with your anger, and you feel, I'm really embarrassed, I got angry. And then you're embarrassed, and then you're really embarrassed and say, oh, here I am embarrassed again. And then you feel despair because you get embarrassed all the time and it really interferes with your life. And then you feel really despairing about it, and after you notice the despair for a while, you say, well, you get depressed, it seems so hopeless. How can you ever manage with this? And then you feel hopeless and you say, well, I need something to do. Maybe I should find something. I deserve something better than this. Maybe I'll just go into a wonderful sexual fantasy, because then I can get some wonderful, you know, desire going, and you know, at least I can distract myself from my depression and despair. And what you're seeing here is a whole chain of cause and effect, where we're reacting and reacting and reacting to a primary thing. Primary might have just been a little bit of impatience. And maybe where you're really living is in the 14th generation away from the impatient, and all this reactive reactivity to things that happen all in a row. And it might be 114th or 1014th that we live in. The art of mindfulness is not that you have to be any place in particular, but just at some point in that process, you wake up. Oh, I'm at the 114th generation. Oh, and just allow that to be as it is. If you notice how you are, and you say, I shouldn't be there, you know, or that's not right, or then you've added 115th. Oh, this is what's going on. Sometimes it's just the thing that you notice is, I'm confused. I don't know what's going on. Or just chaos is happening. At some point, we try just to recognize how things are and wake up and leave it alone. And then slowly you can move back the generations, until someday you'll find yourself being able to notice the arising of something, of an emotional reaction, and see it for what it is, and you don't have to go anywhere with it. Oh, I'm impatient. I don't have to do anything with it. The Buddha gave a story, a simile, of the arrows. And the story goes, there's a man. The Buddha asked his monks, he said, monks, if a man is struck by one arrow, is that painful? And the monk said, sure, that's very painful. And then he said, if the same man is struck by a second arrow, is that even more painful? And they said, yes, that's even more painful. And the Buddha said, basically, after this, he said, the first arrow in life, you don't have much control over. The second arrow is your choice. The first arrow is things that happen in the course of going about living a life. Things, all kinds of things might happen to you. You stub your toe, you get a flat tire, you lose your job, someone you know dies. There's many things that we do that happens to our life that are painful. then there's all these other second arrows that we add to it. And the second arrow is the reactivity that we build on it, the complicated ways in which we relate to the immediacy of the experience. So we might feel, for example, some grief. Someone dies, and it's tremendously sad, and we feel grief. There's all these complicated ways we relate to that grief. Some people are embarrassed by it. Sometimes our people around us somehow give the indication that, haven't you grieved enough? Get over it. And then we feel even more embarrassed, and that's a complication that doesn't allow things to be as they are. Or we feel hopeless in it, or we feel there's many ways in which we complicate something like grief or something like anger. We feel anger, and then we have all of these ideas of what it means to be anger. We shouldn't be angry, we should be angry. This anger means that X, Y, and Z, or anger means I'm supposed to act this way, or I'm embarrassed, I'm shy, I'm justified. And something wrong with me because I'm angry. We add all these second arrows. And what we're trying to do in mindfulness practice is to have uncomplicated emotions. To have emotions where we allow them to be as they are. What it means is that in mindfulness practice, you're allowed to have any emotion at all. You're allowed to feel any way you're all. And when you sit down to meditate, you're sitting down to give yourself radical permission to feel whatever way you are. You don't have to be, you know, angelic when you're sitting here. You can be filled with rage, filled with fear. It's all completely fine. The practice is to learn how to be present for it as simply and uncomplicatedly as you can. It's not easy to do. Then the practice is to notice the ways in which we complicate the primary emotion going on. What, you know, follow the generations. Are you afraid of your fear? Are you angry for it being there? Are you impatient because it's there? Do you feel that you're an unworthy human being because you have this particular emotion? And slowly, slowly, you'll find the ability to have this uncomplicated emotional life. You allow these things to arise through you, and you be you'll be independent of the arising of these things. It means you're allowed to be who you are, but you're not stuck by what you are. Is that making some sense? It's exactly 7:45. I'm trying to be mindful.
I couldn't hear the last sentence you said. Just the tail end.
What did I say? And you'll be independent of the arising of these things. It means you're allowed to be who you are, but you're not stuck by what you are. Is that making some sense? It's exactly 7:45. I'm trying to be mindful.
I couldn't hear the last sentence you said, just the tail end.
What did I say? you'll learn how to be independent of these emotions. So you're allowed to be the way you are, but the practice is to learn how to be independent of them. So there's a wonderful practice that I call writing out an emotion. I recommend it to all of you, especially if you're a person of very strong passions. Like say that you have a lot of desire, and say you have even an addiction to cigarettes or food, or it could be all kinds of things, and you find that you're often compelled to pursue that desire. So an addiction is often very good. And the exercise is to not act on the desire, but write it out. And it can feel like this, you know, cresting wave. It's, you know, it's a wave that gets stronger and stronger, more and more intense. I got to have it right now. And then you kind of maybe have to hold on to the table or your armchair and just, you know, to get through it. But whatever it takes, just kind of not act on it. Just hang in there. Ride it out. And sooner or later, you'll find that the wave breaks. And you'll find yourself at the other side of that wave, kind of sliding down, and the desire will fade away. And it can be very, very empowering for people, especially people who are addicts, to learn that they have the ability to ride their emotions out. Same thing can be done with anger. Next time you feel a strong urge to be angry at someone, lash out, do the exercise of riding the anger out. It doesn't mean the anger is wrong. It doesn't mean that someone hasn't done some injustice to you. But maybe there's a wiser way of responding where you're not being pulled around by the nose by the anger. The anger is not in charge. And if you don't want the anger to be in charge, you have to learn how to be independent of it. And riding out the anger, not acting on it, is one way. What you do in your daily life about your emotions, hopefully you have some wise relationship to that issue. In meditation, because you're sitting here and being quiet, it's a very safe place to let your inner emotional life be as it is. You don't have to censor it or make it different. You can have tremendous bliss, and it's okay. You can have tremendous rage, and it's okay. Everything is okay when you sit and meditate. It's relatively safe because you're not going to lash out at anybody or whatever. And you just let it course through your body and bring presence to it. Does that make some sense? So now it's your turn. So we sat for about 20 minutes before. At the end of the sitting, near the end, I asked you to pay attention to notice what you're feeling, your emotional state or mood. So I'd like to hear from some of you what that was like, what happened when you did that.
Yes? You mentioned about anger, any desire, particularly negative desire, when you write it down, it's going to unfold. How about a positive desire? You know, for example, desire of learning.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach that by writing?
By writing?
Yes.
Oh, I've never done that, writing. So I'm not qualified.
Writing it out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Writing it out.
Yeah.
Oh, you can do it with anything. Anything that feels compelling, anything where you feel a compulsion that you have to act, then see if you can write it out, hang out with it, surf it, but don't give in to it. Don't give in to the compulsion. If there's no compulsion, and it seems like a nice, healthy, good desire to have, go ahead. Except in meditation. In meditation, don't let there be any excuse to interrupt your meditation. You might sit there meditating and you think you get the idea for the next great American novel. No one's ever thought about this. It's really important to write this down because if I don't write it down now, I'll lose it. And American culture for the next 500 years will not have the benefits of this wonderful novel. And so they break your sitting to write it down. There can be creative bursts in meditation. The surface mind, surface chatter falls away, and a little bit of relaxation and concentration that comes with meditation can give birth to wellsprings of creativity and can be very tempting to chase after that, either writing it down or just simply get indulge in thinking about it and following those kinds of thoughts. The art of meditation is not to let anything else except mindfulness have the upper hand. The dedication is to be mindfully still for what's going on and not to give in to anything. So in meditation, don't give in to, just write it out, even the desire to... Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did.
So I was curious to hear a report from some of you. Please.
Usually when I go into my emotions, it's never one emotion I'm dealing with. It's sort of like peeling an onion. As I get through one, do you have anything, is there anything that I should know going from one to the other?
I don't know what to say. Sometimes when people have done a different kind of meditation, there's an old habit of doing that way. And sometimes it takes a while to break the habit so you can really be fresh and enter the mindfulness in an easy way. Sometimes there's all kinds of comparisons a person might want to make. Oh, that one, that way is faster, or when I do the guided meditation, I have a different kind of experience. And, or with guided meditation, I always get really calm. When I do mindfulness, I don't always get calm. You know, I might understand more what's going on with me, but I don't get calm, so maybe it's not as good. Or there's all kinds of comparisons a person might want to make, and you want to be very careful that you don't get caught by those and don't have a wise relationship to those comparisons. Some of the comparisons might be valid, but you know, we tend to interpret much too early and quickly.
I've felt the need lately to use the guided meditation because I've been going through so much. And it sort of helps me get present more quickly settle down more quickly than being on my own, which is more difficult.
Yeah, so it's a fine thing to do then if you find that helpful for you. You might also sometimes not use your guided meditation and see what happens if you bring presence to mindfulness to the coarse or complicated or agitated emotional state you're in. Because there might be some very important lessons to learn there. And if every time you short-circuit it and calm yourself down, then you might not actually learn some of the lessons that are available in that state itself. And in that state, it might actually be a more useful one to follow the onions down. If you get calm, you might actually be bypassing some of the entry points to understand what's going on with you, what makes you tick. So at least sometimes I'd encourage you not to do the guided, but...
What's the difference between the two?
Well, there's many kinds of guided meditation, so I don't know exactly what he's talking about, the kind. But guided meditation usually means you follow a sequence. Either someone is guiding you to pay attention to this, pay attention to this, pay attention to this, or imagine this, or visualize this. Or you've memorized a certain sequence of things pay attention to. And so in mindfulness practice, it's more free flow. It's more choiceless. The mind is not directed towards a particular sequence of things, but rather is open to how things actually are. So I still haven't had any reports so much about what happened in that sitting when I asked you to pay attention to your feelings and emotions. And it's hard to believe no one here had any. Yes?
It felt like a tornado in my head. just one thing after another, and maybe even just second on my breath.
Uh-huh.
And then back to yo-yo thoughts. It was really, not frustrating, but it's really difficult to let all that go.
You have to be very respectful of the momentum. If a person spent a whole day being very busy rushing around in their head, when you sit down to meditate, it takes a while for that momentum to unwind. You can't just turn it off like that. And one of the ways that people suffer extra on meditation, they sit down to meditate and then they immediately think, if they're not completely clear and pristine and calm immediately, something's wrong with me. I should have the ability to just turn off all that momentum right like that. And you can't do that. It's not unrealistic. And part of the meditation is learning how to be very accepting of the state you're in. And then that acceptance will allow for things to calm down. But in feeling all that chaos and all that kind of tornado, what was your emotional state in the middle of that?
I was thinking just about calmness and peace.
you're hoping for that. There's no hope in mindfulness practice.
I don't know, there's so many. Really, I can't pinpoint, just like you said, like an onion. It just went from one thing
great
to another.
Well, I could congratulate you. The first stage of mindfulness meditation, is to realize the mind is like the classic description is mind is like a waterfall, but maybe more like a tornado or a hurricane is better. To realize the mind is out of control is the first stage, because rather than feeling discouraged by that, a person should feel, oh, good, I'm making progress. At least now I know how I am. As opposed to continuing kind of semi-conscious or unconscious about all that and going about living a life kind of semi-conscious and just kind of not noticing how out of control the mind is. It's much better to know the mind is out of control than it is to have a mind that's out of control and not know it. So congratulations. And then be patient. It'll change. Please. I like to think of meditation, sitting down to be still and mindful of what's happening in the present, as being a truth teller, a kind of it's a way of finding out what's really going on. And there's all these ways in which we don't really pay attention well to what's really going on. We distract ourselves from ourselves. The other thing is there's a very interesting to compare meditating early in the morning and meditating near the end of the day. Because in the morning we tend to be much more fresh. And by the end of the day we've accumulated all this stuff, you know, this momentum and all this agitation or all this something. And then it has to be let go of before you can be calm or concentrated again. For people who don't have any way of letting go of the accumulated tensions that build up, those tensions will slowly accumulate over days and months and years. They might, you know, let go of 90% or 99% of it when you sleep at night, for example, or when you do various things. But it's very hard to get rid of all of it. And meditation is one of those rare places in life that allows us to get really deep into the process of relaxation, letting go. And so that momentum, that accumulated momentum, can really kind of begin to be emptied. So not only simply the stuff from the one day, but sometimes there's stuff from a decade that we carry with us. And sometimes it's a great surprise to realize that as a surface chatter begins to calm down, the old stuff that you thought was long since finished kind of bubbles up. Because it's accumulated in there, it's never really been finished and processed, and so stuff comes up. It's kind of like some people think that when you fast, when you do kind of a food fast, that after a while, all these toxins and different things in your body begin being released, and they come out, and various kinds of interesting things might happen to you if you fast long enough as this purification process goes on. Meditation is probably not a very good analogy, but meditation is kind of like a mental fast, where we no longer are taking in a lot of food of thoughts and reactions and that and the mind becomes still and quiet and empty to some degree compared to maybe normal. And then all this other stuff begins to bubble up. And the purification process sometimes means that stuff that, you know, is not comfortable bubbles up. If you think the meditation is a linear path from going from whatever state you're in now to becoming calmer, more blissful, more spiritual, and just kind of a steady, slow, direct, you know, linear path, then you're asking for suffering. It's a spiral path. And so there are times of great bliss and calm and settledness, and times when that doesn't happen at all. And sometimes it can go years and years and years where it's very difficult, very agitated, decades sometimes. But the dedication to be honestly present for how things are is very helpful. Sometimes it can be years of great calm and great bliss, or maybe your neighbor, the person sitting near you, is just every time you talk to them, they talk about how the great bliss of meditation. They seem like they're floating off their cushion, you know, and you say, well, why couldn't that happen to me? And then after a few years of that, they get hit over the head by something that they never paid attention to. It just bubbles up, and you're kind of amazed at how difficult it is for them suddenly. It's a spiral path. You never really know what's going to happen. The dedication is to be honest with what's happening in the moment. Not doesn't really matter what's happening to you. What really matters, are you honestly present for what's happening and trying to find that place to be non-reactive to what's going on? That's what really counts. So I'll try one more time for someone to talk about their experience. Yes?
I have an experience. When you ask concentrate on part of your body and realize that I feel I need to meditate many, many years and how tired I am. It's exactly what you have said. I feel I need to sit here for a long time.
Yeah. Maybe so. What's really... it can seem very daunting to us, that the task that's can be done. But the process of changing ourselves happens much faster than... happens amazingly fast, even though it can seem very, very slow. If you think of all the seconds you've had in your life to be filled with fear or desire or anger, craving, to have a distracted mind, you're kind of lost in your thoughts and all that, the momentum of that is just phenomenal. And it doesn't take a long time to begin making some inroads on that. By drops, the bathtub is filled with water. It's almost, it's almost like there's a 10,000-to-1 ratio. That one moment of honestly being present for how things are now helps resolve 10,000 moments of being mindless. It might still take a long time to get through the process, but the benefits and the power of mindful presence is really strong, even though it might be lost to you in the day-to-day living of it. That's it. Yes?
Well, I was feeling irritated and angry, but it didn't feel so personal.
Great.
I don't know if I can describe that very well, but it made me feel like it was possible to sit with those emotions without shoving them away, realizing that you're not shoving.
Great. You said a number of important points. One is that sometimes identifying and labeling the emotion can help us not take it so personal, or not to define ourselves through that emotion. One of the ways we complicate an emotion is define ourselves by it. Oh, this is my emotion. This is my anger. This says something about me being angry. It's a lot easier if you just notice it as anger and don't necessarily take ownership of it or personalize it or anything. Just, oh, anger is here. And then sit still in the middle of that anger. And naming an emotion can be very, very helpful for that. The kind of the ancient stories, fairy tales, is if you name the dragon loses its power. And sometimes it works that way. If you can name the emotion, it loses that power that comes from our defining ourselves through that emotion, by identifying with it. And the word emotion is interesting because the word the Latin means for emotion, the prefix means out, and motion just means motion. So the etymology of the word emotion means to move out. All emotions want to move. There's something in process, they're in motion. Unless we freeze them, unless we hold them still. So, for example, resentment is frozen anger. And there's all these kinds of frozen ways in which we freeze our emotions and to be a certain way. The task of mindfulness is to begin to loosen them up again and let them move through us. And the more mindful and more honest you can be about it, the emotional presence, probably the more quickly you'll notice that it moves through you, changes through. So in mindfulness practice, in mindfulness meditation, we begin by bringing our attention to the breath. Trying to be very simple with the breath, try to develop some concentration, continuity, some mindfulness of what goes on when you breathe, letting the breath kind of settle you. If something becomes more compelling in your experience in the breathing, then you let go of the breathing, and you let the meditative awareness settle on this new event. So last week we talked about physical experiences in the body. If strong physical sensations arise, pleasant or unpleasant, or strong sounds or visions that you might have, then and then more compelling the breath, more predominant, then you just let go of the breath and notice, bring your attention to those parts of your body. Name them, feel them, be present for them, explore them. See if you can develop that non-reactive awareness, allowing awareness there, meditative awareness, be calm and present for how things are. If an emotion becomes predominant or becomes compelling for your attention, then you can let go of your breath again or let go of the physical sensations that you're paying attention to, and then let the emotion be the place you cultivate your meditative awareness. So the emotional feeling you're having doesn't have to be a distraction from your meditation. It becomes the meditation. And you're allowed to have any emotion that a human being can possibly have, you're allowed to have in meditation. There's no need to censor it or judge it or do anything about it except try to feel it carefully and mindfully, noticing the ways in which you complicate it by reacting to it or judging it or personalizing it, defining yourself by it. And the idea is to be very simple with the emotion, very simply present for how it actually is. So there can be kind of almost like a silent mind or a quiet mind or easeful mind. Oh, I'm feeling this way. And just kind of try to be that way. Or if you can't be that way, then just notice how you are. You might be the 14th generation, 114th generation. It might be pure chaos. It might be tornadoes. If it's tornadoes and a lot of things happening at once, don't try to identify any particular thing, any particular emotion. Just try to identify the whole catastrophe. Just, it's a mess in here. You know, just be really honest. Boy, it's really a mess. I'm sitting in a mess. And then feel what it's like to be a mess. Feel the chaos and the energy of that. It's not always so easy to recognize that you're having a strong emotion. I know that for me, when I was younger, I had a self-identity where I was not an angry person. So when I got angry, I didn't see it because it didn't fit inside the definition of who I was. And sometimes the anger would have to really hit me over the head before I really noticed or admitted that I was angry. Sometimes it can be that way. It's hard to recognize an emotion that's very compelling or very powerful within us. It's very important to learn to recognize these things when they arise. After we've recognized them, it's important part of the process is to learn just to allow them, to accept them. Acceptance in meditation doesn't mean that we condone them. It doesn't mean we justify them. It just simply means that we allow them to be there without any further complication. Just let them bubble up and be as they are. And then it's useful to label the emotion, to name it. I remember once when I was feeling yucky, I lay down to kind of be with myself and be with kind of heavy feelings I was feeling. And I felt my chest was kind of was extended. And as I exhaled, I couldn't really relax my chest all the way. I just kind of was feeling how I was feeling, being with my sensations in my body, feeling how it was. And then I recognized in one moment that I was depressed. And I said, oh, depressed. And as soon as I said that, my chest released. Sometimes being able to identify and name an emotion is very, very helpful for helping us not be so caught by it. And you might want to name it kind of repetitively, whatever it might be. And then you want to investigate it. You want to kind of not just simply be present for it, but you also want to look more carefully. What is this experience? What is the physical side of the emotional experience? All emotions, almost all emotions, will have a physical bodily component aspect of it. If you get afraid, you probably find your stomach maybe tight or your shoulders kind of curling over. Or if you're angry, maybe your fists clench or your stomach again or your chest or your jaws. Or if you're really filled with love, maybe you find this great relaxation and this, you know, softness that happens somewhere in your chest and sense of openness and vulnerability somewhere in your heart center or something. There's a whole range of places we might feel our emotions in our body. It's very helpful to drop into the body and feel the emotion as a physical experience. One of the reasons for that is that then we're less likely to get caught up in the story that's connected to the emotion being present. We tend very easily to get lost in the story, the ideas, the thoughts, So we get angry and we get lost in the conversation of what I'm going to tell that guy. The story is not important for meditation. How you're feeling is. So one of the ways to stay present for direct feeling is to find the physical anchor for that emotion, you know, placing the body where it is, and then just hang out there. A friend of mine who went on a long retreat had a lot of fear. He's kind of a fear-type person. And he used to panic when his fear came up until he recognized that his fear was a lot of tightness and contraction in his chest. He said, oh, I can hang out with that. It became much less frightening for him just to feel it as physical sensation. And also, as soon as you feel something physically in your body, then the somatic processing that can happen happens much more easy if there's awareness and mindfulness of what's happening in the body. So you want to recognize that you're having an emotion. You want to accept it. You want to label it. And you want to investigate it, feel it in your body. Be with it there. You want to be careful not to make it complicated. One of the ways to make it complicated is to want it to go away. Another way to complicate it is to want it to stay. Another way to complicate it is to have a time frame for when it should go away. I've been with it now for 5 minutes and it hasn't gone away yet. It doesn't matter how long it stays. Mindfulness is not about what you're experiencing or how long you're experiencing it. It's about how you develop your mindful meditative awareness of what is happening. The practice has more to do with how you see things than what you see. And we're cultivating that ability to see things with this mindful acceptance, independent presence. And if after you've been with something for 10 minutes and it's not gone away, and you say, shoot, it's not working, it hasn't gone away, at that moment you lost your practice, you lost the mindful allowing awareness of how things actually are. So all this makes sense? I hope it doesn't seem too complicated. The idea is to be very simple about it. One or two questions about this instruction? Yes.
It seems to me from what you're saying that you're saying focus on the emotion and not the cause of the emotion.
Right.
Because I think it's difficult to do that.
Yeah, it's difficult. This practice is difficult, just in general. But it's also difficult to distinguish our concern about the cause and the emotional reaction itself. And with practice, you'll learn to distinguish between those two. And often what we think is the cause is not really the cause. Sometimes we think what that person said to me is the cause. That person said, can you believe what that person said? If that person hadn't said that, it wouldn't have happened. That person's the cause. If you got angry, that person's not the cause. The person's the condition for your anger, not the cause. You know where the cause is? It's with you. And part of the process of mindfulness is to be still enough and mindful enough so you begin seeing actually where the cause of things is. But we're not looking for the cause. We're just trying to be present for the way things are. And then as you do that, the cause will show itself. So it's not analysis, you know, looking back. Does that address your thing more or less? Your comment?
I think that often we tend to be preoccupied with whatever that thing is.
Right. And that's why dropping into the body and feeling the somatic, physical aspects of the emotion. Because what's happening in your body is always happening in the present moment. The cause happened some time ago, usually, the way we're preoccupied, we're thinking about it. So one of the ways to help, or if we're planning the future, then, you know, that's not happening in the present either. But the body's always in the present. So if you're planning the future because you're worried and afraid, if you drop down into the fear in your body and feel that fear in your body, then you know you're in the present and you're no longer concerned about the preoccupation, or not as much at least. Yes, last one.
So far you've been talking about how to deal or address the tornadoes, negative emotions. What happens if you have joy or a positive feeling.
It's exactly the same.
You don't hold on to it? Nope.
And you don't try to assign meaning to it and say, oh, finally, I hope everybody notices what a great meditator I am. Or, you know, this means that, which all these, we do exactly the same thing. And some people have beautiful, blissful meditations and wonderful joy in their body and meditation, and they get really afraid, you know, if they're Irish Catholic. You know, it's really a challenge. Because, you know, physical pleasure is just not, you know, it doesn't go with the program. And sometimes but anyway, the idea is to continue the practice of mindful awareness of how things actually are without trying to hold on to anything, react to anything, resist anything, make anything better, make anything stay, make anything go away, just how it is. And it can be a lot easier to want to do that if things are uncomfortable. Because then, you know, if it's uncomfortable, if I do this practice really well, then it won't be so bad. But when things are really blissful in meditation, then there's very little motivation sometimes to do the practice. I mean, this is great. Why bother doing anything? I'll just hang out here forever, you know, or I'll just hold on to this. And the real strength of the practice comes when you take refuge in the practice of mindfulness, no matter if it's pleasant or unpleasant experience. And if you really want to learn how to be independent, have this great independent presence that you can bring to all kinds of areas of your life, you want to be sure to do this practice even for the pleasant experiences, the pleasant emotions. So I've talked a lot today. Let's end with a short sitting. Now, sometimes when I begin meditation periods, I do a little guided preparation. You know, you breathe deeply, sit up straight, relax, let go. Mindfulness doesn't require any preparations. You could just begin immediately, noticing how you actually are in the moment. So you might, since we're talking about emotions now, you might begin immediately to notice what is the emotion, emotional state, the mood, the attitude that's present for you. It might be very subtle, it might be coarse. Try to recognize it, accept it, give it permission to be there. Name it a few times, label it. If you're unsure what it is, then just label it emotion. And then spend some time noticing the physical aspects of it, the sensations in your body that let you know that this emotion is happening. The physicality of it is not a story, it's not a reaction. what happens if you just hang out for a while with the physical aspect of the emotion, the mood, the attitude? Sometimes the body can be a container for the emotion. Let the body kind of hold whatever you're feeling, as if it's a soft receptacle, a soft container, within which the emotions can bounce and flow and move. And then trying to be as accepting of yourself as possible, as you are right now. It's okay to be just the way you are. Become aware of your breathing, as if your breathing is in the very center of who you are. Not to ignore or to deny or push away who you are, what's going on. Just at the center of gravity of who you are is your breathing. Hang out there with your breath. So hopefully, as you do the practice at home, that incorporating and including your emotions as part of the practice will make it easier to stay present. Because if you don't include your emotions, then when they become strong and compelling, it might just actually carry you away easier, kind of propel you out from the present. And you might also begin paying attention to your emotional life outside of meditation. It might be very interesting to discover what it's like to be mindful of your emotions as opposed to reactive to them. So next week we'll continue with the instructions to include thoughts, thinking. So rather than having thoughts and thinking being a distraction or being a hindrance for practice, there's a whole art of learning how to bring mindfulness to our thinking life also. It's very helpful. So thank you, and I wish you all a happy week.